close your eyes. And some days I can't even. All right, hour two of the Blitz starting right now, 1340 AM, 105.7 FM. Also live in your Fan Run radio app. That's free wherever you get your apps. Take us with you on the go. Also live in the Fan Run radio web browser. Instead of an opening drive to start hour two, let's head back over to the Big Orange Philly phone lines. We got Logan on the line now, ready to start hour two, continuing a little Tennessee baseball talk. Logan, happy Tuesday. How are you today?
How's it going, my man? Back from Hoover and ready to rest and recover and then hit the road to Clemson this weekend. I did not see that one coming. They threw us a wild card.
Yeah, what surprised you about Tennessee's draw in this regional?
I think you mentioned it. For one, like, if you're Clemson and you're seated that high, how in the world are you drawing one of the top two seeds? If not the, I mean, Tennessee probably is the top two seed. That was crazy. I think that it's, I love the regional, by the way. The one thing that jumps out to me, my first reaction looking at all teams, this has got to be the most athletic from a pure athletic standpoint. This region has to have the best athletes out of all the other regions. I mean, pound for pound, Clemson is the most athletic team in the country. Then, you know, Tennessee, we all know about the dudes that Tony Vitello has, right? Whether it's on the pitching staff, you've got some unreal, you know, guys with power and spin. And then, of course, the bats, there's some bats that can really get after it. And you look all the way down the line to Lipscomb. Lipscomb has hit 106 homers and stolen 99 bags this year. And then you got Charlotte with some dudes. So, that's the first thing that jumped out to me was the athleticism of this region. And then obviously it's a tough draw for, you know, Tennessee and Clemson. We mentioned why, you know, it's a tough draw for Clemson. For Tennessee, it's just, it's a bad matchup just in general. On the pitching side of things, they've got their own two-way guy and Caden Grice.
All right, we got you back again. I was going to say, you cut out for a second there.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we got you now. You just cut out for a second there, but we hear you clearly again. But yeah, you were talking about some of the guys that that Clemson has, and just in general the athletes in this region. I mean, you even told this to me yesterday when we were talking about all the talent, all the athleticism in this region. Well, if you're a scout, this is the perfect kind of regional to go to.
Yeah, absolutely. The Tennessee has, whether it's a Chase Dolander, a Jared Dickey, and then Clemson, they've got Caden Grice. He's a two-way guy. He leads them and wins on the mound, but man, at the plate, he's their dude. He has hit double-digit homers all 3 years of college baseball. He's the ACC version of Jackie Cags. And then you've got guys, Cam Fisher, who played at Hardin Valley, for Charlotte. He's going to be someone to watch. And then Lipscomb has all kinds of dudes that a scout can really cover in terms of trying to figure out what are some deep stashes in the draft. Lipscomb fits that mold. They've got guys that are really athletic and unheralded. So, man, it's going to be a region to watch, man. I'm excited for it.
When obviously you talked about a tougher draw than maybe we're expecting. When you look at this Tennessee team and some of the road struggles they've had this year with hitting the baseball and just the way
this region shapes up with some of the pitching these teams have. If you had to kind of power rank the different elements of this baseball team, the different factors, I guess what would you say is the most important thing that Tennessee needs to show up in Clemson and do to get out of this regional and get to a super?
Well, I think the theme going forward, whether it's this regional or beyond, is you have to get consistent production from the offense, from the bats. They ran into a buzzsaw against A&M. Other teams struggled against A&M and Hoover, so I think Jim Schlossnagel and that bunch had a game plan going in. A lot of guys were sort of finding the groove on the pitching staff, and so hopefully that's the case, that you just kind of ran into a mean force there, and hopefully that the offense wasn't a sign of things to come. But, the offense has just got to have to step up. And because I think with the pitching, what we saw from Dolander, his last outing, that was super impressive. His most dominant outing of the season. Lindsey was pitcher of the week coming out of Columbia. And we all know what the bullpen can do, right? And if Chase Burns is set up for success late in games and leverage situations, you got to feel good about it. So that's where my mind goes, is the offense. They're just going to have to they don't have to put up, 15 runs a game. But if they can just consistently put together hits and kind of have that power and swag to them that they normally do, then – I think the Vols should be okay.
Hey, Logan, Matthew Gill here, filling in with Charlie for the day. I'll just pose the same thing I did to him. I my gut reaction when I saw kind of the overall path to Omaha for the Vols, I thought to myself, it's either a quick out in the regional or they win the super regional, and I just don't see much in between. Where do you kind of sit on what the on the Vols' chances of making another berth in Omaha?
Yeah, I kind of agree with that, because as tough as the draw is initially, it sets up nicely for Super Region.
Right.
The one thing, they were linked to Terre Haute for the longest time, and that was the most talked about region, right, going into this thing. The problem with that is you're matched up with Wake Forest. Mm. But now, getting this Clemson draw, you're matched up with Auburn. And, guys, I'm telling you, as good as Auburn has been, and as much as I like Butch Thompson and what he does with that program, 1-3 of that division can win it. It could be Auburn, it could be Southern Miss, it could be Samford. Samford could flip that region
its head. Before. Quit hating on the Ivy League.
No love for the Ivies.
Nah, I don't know. I don't know if I can go there. But, Southern Miss, it's whether it's Southern Miss or Auburn or even a Samford, I think those are good matchups for Tennessee. I think the most important thing is if you win the Clemson Regional, it's going to go through Clemson, right? Let's be honest. And so if you're Tennessee, if you're ever able to take them down, the hottest team in the country and one of my favorite teams, to watch and to kind of study this year, you're going with a full head of steam out of Clemson. And so you guys are 100% right. Like, I think if Tennessee is able to pull it off, they can, and if the Auburn Regional is an upset, then you're hosting a super.
Right. Yeah, and that's what Charlie was saying, and they've been so good in Lindsey Nelson, and that kind of gets to my point. I think it sets up nicely for them. Or it's a quick disappointment. I'll leave you guys with this. I was telling Charlie, been to the Clemson Stadium. It's incredible. You guys are going to love it. You're going to have a great time. And check out Triple T's if you've never been to Clemson. Great spot there. I think it's Tiger Town Tavern is what it stands for. But you guys are going to have a great time and represent well for the Vols.
Yeah, I can't wait to check it out. It does look pretty nice on videos and photos and stuff. You know, I'm trying to think. It does. I think it does play a little small. I heard y'all talking about that. I don't know what it is, the dead center, but 360 and left center. And one thing about it, Doug Kingsmore Stadium, I'm trying to verify if they still have the stupid little incline. There's still no warning track. I remember that. There's been no warning track, and they have the stupid incline out there. It was like that for years. I'm trying to confirm if that's gone away, because judging by some videos from this year, the incline has gone away, which is a good thing if you're not used to playing in it. Yeah. That's one interesting nugget right there, is trying to figure out. There's definitely no warning track still.
Yeah, I can't speak to that. I was there in 2019, as I was telling Charlie, in my head it played a lot bigger than the dimensions you laid out. So don't take my word for it, but I don't remember an incline back then. Very possibly could have been, because clearly my memory is foggy on the Clemson stuff. But you guys are going to love it. It's going to be an awesome regional site, I think. They, as I was telling Charlie, they have a great baseball fan base, and they do for all of the sports, really. It is a great fan base, and it's going to be an awesome site for this regional. Obviously, the Vols are going to show out very well as well.
Yeah, it's a college town, you know, just like Knoxville, so I'm sure we'll fit in just fine.
Yeah, let's hope they have a Chili's. That's what I'm rooting for. I got a gift card, Logan, so, you know, we'll have a good time. 2 for $25, conveniently. It's a $25 gift card.
There you go.
Yeah, beautiful. If anyone out there wants to give me and Logan free tickets, though, please let me know. That'd be beautiful. I don't know how we're going to get tickets. Logan seems to not be worried about it. I'm worried about it, if you can't tell.
My concern has grown over the last little bit. I've got confirmation from UT Ticket Office that, there's no allotment. I held up hope that there was going to be an allotment, but no, it's just going to be a train wreck of probably way more people than they could imagine logging on at 4:30 onto the Clemson portal, trying to get tickets for baseball.
That portal is going to crash. There's no doubt in my mind. I'm gonna just go ahead and start recruiting family members now. We just need everyone we can get, all hands on deck for Wednesday at 4:30 p.m. If you're listening, actually, and you're also trying to buy tickets, it's actually Wednesday at 5:30. It's still Wednesday at 4:30, Logan. I'm lying to him.
Right. Yep. Yep, with you there. Yeah, I got you there. Now I'm going to recruit my 10-year-old to get on the line. This is no joke. He ordered like 6 or 7 movies on Amazon last night in the middle of the night. So if he can do that, then he can step up to the plate and try to get some tickets on this Clemson portal.
Were any of them good movies?
Do what?
Were any of them good movies, or...
I don't know. The only one I can remember off the top of my head, because that's what I was trying to do before I got on with you guys. I'm like, why in the heck do I have all these emails from Amazon? I was like, oh no, because they were all like, it was clear that they were all like movies and not like mail orders. But like one of them was a Spider-Man, like Spider-Verse or whatever that stuff is. Along those lines.
Well, I think you only have 48 hours to watch them, so you have some work to do. You have 7 movies to watch in the next 48 hours.
In the process, he also subscribed to, I've never heard of this, but it's an Amazon thing, like a free trial. It's called Amazon Max or something like that. But yeah, free trial, but no, I'm going to get whacked for 15 a month if I don't cancel that thing here in a few days. So.
He knows what he's doing. He knows what he's up to. Before we get you out of here, Logan, I want to ask you about some of the other regionals. Obviously, there's 15 other regionals happening this weekend. It's not just a Tennessee World. It's not just a Clemson regional. But a lot of really fun baseball is going to take place over the next week. What is the most intriguing regional to you outside of this Clemson regional? And then a follow-up to that. You know, I think typically you see World Cup draws and they always talk about the group of death. Mm. What is the regional of death this year?
Good question. I guess it depends on, there's a lot of interesting thoughts I have, but I'm going to go with, so one to watch for me would be the Columbia Regional, South Carolina, Campbell, NC State, and then you got Central Connecticut. And that's actually tight. Like, I think Campbell can come out of that region. The problem is NC State also being in there, that's going to make it tough. But that region is really tight. Also, same thing with Kentucky Regional. The kind of death match that you talked about, it's not that I'm crazy about any of these teams. You've got Kentucky, West Virginia, Indiana, and Ball State. There is not a heavy degree of separation at all in that region. And, like, that could get real and sad for the fans and the, you know, I'm sure you guys have read about it, the whole deal with, you know, not being able to house these teams properly because of all the other events going on in the area up there in Lexington. That's just terrible. They should have, like, put a bid in for some other location or something.
They botched that so bad. I can't believe the NCAA allowed that to happen. For those of you that are unaware of what Logan's talking about, in Lexington this weekend, there are state softball championships, state baseball championships, I think two other travel tournaments. There's a music festival in Danville, which is just outside of town. And then, yes, there's the Railbird Music Festival, which is
I will be there.
Massive. Looks good. It looks like a great lineup. I'm jealous, Matthew.
It's going to be incredible.
Because of all of that, there are no hotel rooms left in the city. So I don't know how any fans are going to go to any of these games because the baseball players and the baseball teams themselves are being housed in Kentucky dorm rooms. They didn't even have hotel rooms for the teams.
That's so brutal.
But yeah, I think if you're on the road, if you're traveling there, that's the type of stuff we talked about it, Charlie, on the podcast. That if you're a road team and you go through stuff like that and you can catch some wins, like, you become road dogs, right?
Yeah.
And I think that helped. I think that helped Ole Miss last year because they go to Coral Gables. The weather was a mess. The schedule was all out of whack. And, you know, you're just sitting there waiting around. And when you're around guys like Tim Elko and Dylan DeLucia, their attitude and their personality is going to rub off on you. And you pick up a couple of wins, man, sometimes you can carry that all the way to Omaha. So that's an interesting region for me just because it's going to be a bar fight, I think. And then another one, Arkansas, Fayetteville region. You got Arkansas, Santa Clara, TCU, and Arizona. TCU and Arizona were both bubble teams this time last week.
I was shocked to see Arizona got it.
Yeah, so TCU is a little more safely in this time last week. A couple of weeks ago, they were firmly on the bubble. But they finished a little strong. They won the Big 12 tournament, so they're squarely in. And then Arizona sneaks in, like, at the last second. Just barely gets in before the door closes. But I'm telling you, they did not form into the team that I thought they would. And I didn't expect them to be at the very top of the Pac-12. I knew they were going to be top four or five in the conference. But Chase Davis and Kiko Romero, that's a loaded statement right there with just those those four words. That's a lot of firepower. Chase Davis has more helium than any other player in this draft this summer. He's a freaking star. That's one to me that I think might get a little goofy. But at the end of the day, I still think Arkansas should come out of it. I don't like the draw that they ended up with in there, but I still think the Hogs should come out of that division. But I don't think it'll be easy by any stretch.
You got your eyes on any kind of team this year that you think can make an Ole Miss type run, or just in general, any non-one seeds you feel like are in decent shape to get to Omaha?
I don't know that. I don't know about an Ole Miss. Obviously, Tennessee draws all kinds of comparisons to Ole Miss, but that's been throughout here as it all shook out at the end. Like, Tennessee's a two seed, right? They didn't just barely get in the tournament. I'm not seeing really an Ole Miss type of thing, but, you know, I think that it's wide open this year. I think that Aaron Fitt from D1 Baseball, what was the term he used? Competitive balance. There's a lot of competitive balance to this field. And I think that's right on the nose. Boston College going to that Alabama regional. Alabama needs to watch out because BC can pull the upset in Tuscaloosa. I think A&M comes out of the Stanford region. Do not buy stock in Stanford. I've done it over the past couple of years. It's failed every time. And like last year, in terms of my power rankings, I had them right behind Tennessee. I thought them and Tennessee were destined to meet up in Omaha last year, and it did not happen. No, Stanford, they've got talent, man. They've got talent, but there is something about, I don't know if it's playing out west in that PAC conference. I don't know what it is, but when it comes time to, you know, to really get down to business, they lack some grit. They lack some ability to be the upper team and to have, you know, to carry that weight around. So I think A&M can get that region. I don't know about much of a dark horse, though. All these teams are pretty close together. Southern Miss could be interesting. They're an older team. And they still got Tanner Hall at the top of that rotation. That could be a team to watch. So, yeah, no, I mean, some of these teams, Coastal Carolina could ride their offense. Campbell has got a lot of swag and a lot of confidence. I mentioned them coming out of the South Carolina regional.
I think they're going to get to Omaha.
Yeah, no, that might be my boldest of take. I don't really know how bold that is because, you know, we've been waiting. The college baseball fans have been waiting, seems like year in and year out the past few years, for Campbell to have this type of opportunity and this type of moment. And I think the door's open for him this year, man. I agree with you, Charlie. That I think the Camels are destined for Omaha.
All right, on the way out, again, we're talking with Logan Quinton, LDQ Sports on Twitter. That's where you can find him. Your resident college baseball expert. Does Tennessee, just yes or no, make it out of the Clemson Regional?
Woo!
Yeah, throwing the hard questions at you here early in the week.
Yeah.
Just your early gut feeling.
My gut feeling?
Early gut feeling. Will they make it out of the Clemson Regional?
I got a gut feeling they do. And, you know, it feels like I'm beating my head up against the wall because, I mean, yeah, let's be honest. This team has made strides. Like, it's not leaps and bounds, but it's been baby steps along the way. If they can do what they're supposed to do offensively, like we talked about, full head of steam coming out of Clemson, if you pull that off, and that may just wake up the giant. And so I go with my gut here. I may be let down yet again for like the 90th time this season, but I'll go with that for now.
Love to hear it. And love talking to you as always. We'll try to get you back on again this week. As we get closer to that regional, we can really, you know, dive into the matchups and get further into this entire regional and into Charlotte as a whole. But good to hear from you, and hope you have a beautiful rest of your day, brother.
Thank you, guys.
All right, that was Logan Quinton on the Big Orange Philly phone lines. Again, 6625 Manorville Pike in Halls. That's Big Orange Philly's, your spot for burgers and brews after work. Maybe you want to pop in on a quick lunch break, grab one of their famous Phillies. It's a good spot to watch a game on the weekend. Tell you what, that'd be a great place to watch college baseball this weekend. All those TVs, all the different games. Watch Tennessee try to make it into a super. They got live music, pool, darts, karaoke on the weekends. You can find their full menu over at BigOrangePhillies.com. We'll catch a break here. On the other side, we'll dive into a short segment before we get into good, bad, and the ugly. All that next here on The Blitz. Matthew, I don't know if you saw this, but Ben Joyce made his MLB debut last night.
I did see it.
Just as electric as he was a year ago.
Just like we remember.
Yeah. I mean, a year ago yesterday, he was essentially winning an SEC championship and celebrating with his buddies, you know, maybe popping over to one of the college bars or having a nice meal at a local Knoxville establishment. And
yeah.
Now, you know, a year later, he's pitching in an MLB game. And not just that, recording a hold, too. Came in, believe it was the seventh inning, I want to say. Yeah, seventh inning. And made his MLB debut last night. Pitched one inning. Did give up a hit, but at the same time, struck out two. Did not give up a run. Didn't really get in any danger either. His first pitch of his MLB career, 102, pardon
yeah,
me.
Yeah,
102 on the black, on the outer half of the plate.
Best Los Angeles Angel. He's their best player now.
Gotta be, yeah. I mean, can't think of any other one. Great players on that team.
No. I did have a hypothetical for you, though, I was thinking of when I was coming up here. Would you have rather faced Ben Joyce last night? Or which would you think you would have more success at? Making contact with that 102 mile per hour pitch, or if you had to close out on Caleb Martin last night, like from the elbow to the wing?
Well, my vertical is like five debit cards stacked on top of each other. And I'm talking like flat ways too, not up and down. So Caleb Martin's what, 6'7"?
Probably. I think that's a fair 6'8" maybe.
I don't think I could successfully – I don't think there's any kind of closeout that I can provide that he can't shoot over top.
Yeah, especially
in the
end.
And he might just miss a three.
Yeah, exactly.
Do I know Ben Joyce is throwing a fastball, or am I just up there?
Yeah, you know that Ben Joyce is throwing a fastball, and you know Caleb Martin's going to shoot the three.
Do I think it'll be – or do I know if it's going to be a strike, or do I just know he's throwing a fastball?
Right down the middle, 102.
And I just have to make contact?
Yeah.
I feel like I can, if I know it's going to be 102 and in the zone, I think I could get that.
Fast, though.
I think I could get a bat on it.
Yeah.
I'm not even saying a barrel. You know, it might make my hands hurt for the next 3 months.
Yeah.
It might be right off the end. Yeah. You know, it might be right off the knob. But I think if I know it's coming, I can just get that foot down and just basically swing as it's coming out of the hands and maybe just touch a ball.
Yeah, it's all timing.
You know, I don't know am I going to square it up? Am I even going to get it out of the infield? Am I even going to get it out of the grass? I don't know, but territory even, I don't know. But I think I could touch the ball with the bat.
Yeah, and it's just like, even the fact that you have to question whether you can even touch it, like that's how, like.
It's moving too. I mean, that is a.
Oh, great.
It's not a flat 102. I mean, that thing
got great movement on it.
Yank it at the end.
But, yeah, it's just it astonishes me all the time at how good Major League Baseball players are at hitting, you know, regularly 100-mile-per-hour pitches.
Are you a fan of the umpire cam?
The umpire cam?
See it sometimes on ESPN broadcast. Yeah, the
no.
POV.
No.
I like it just because I love seeing those pitches come in.
I like the Twitter videos that it's Pitching Ninja, something
yeah,
like that,
Rob,
where
Rob
they
Friedman.
Will, yeah, well, the, where they'll, you know, overlay somebody's fastball with their curveball or whatever and show the break on it. I like that a lot. I love pitching, but I don't know that the umpire cam is the best way to watch it.
I don't want to watch a ton of it, but I like the occasional umpire cam.
Mm, something different.
Just it's the worst though when you get a big hit with the umpire cam on and they have to frantically switch to the wide view and you're trying to locate the ball.
Ball's already on, yeah.
Yeah. But I love seeing the movement of a pitch coming in as it comes in. the Angels in general, this is already the second player from that 2022 draft they've called up.
Who's the other?
Zach Neto.
Mm.
Conveniently enough, both of those guys were in the Knoxville Regional last year.
How about that?
Zach Neto played for Campbell. He was their shortstop, their best player. I hope this is a trend that continues now that they've changed up some of the rules in terms of MLB service time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping this means that
more young guys.
Yeah, that you see teams
quicker.
Call guys
yep.
up.
I love it.
Sooner, because I think that a lot of times, especially when you see upperclassmen get drafted from the college level, guys are getting drafted that don't need to go spend 2 to 3 to 4 years in the minors.
They're kind of a finished product.
They're at least close
or
too.
Yeah,
like Kamar Rocker, for example, Jack Leiter, those are two guys in the Rangers organization. Kamar recently towards UCL and had to have Tommy John, but I feel like those are two guys that could pitch pretty quickly in the MLB. Like Paul Skenes, when he gets drafted this summer, I feel confident that guy could pitch in the major leagues in September.
Especially if he goes to a bad organization.
Right.
Like, you can't tell me that you have four starters who are better than
some
of those
he probably
kids.
Won't, but I think he could.
Right, right. No, I'm with you.
Right, like
they do
the Nationals probably going to draft Paul Skenes. Dylan Cruz probably going to go number one. Paul Skenes number two to the Nationals. I would rather have him start than Chad Kuhl tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just, I hope this is a trend that continues, though. And we saw, oh, gosh, I can't remember his name all of a sudden. Sonny DeShara. Like, he got sent straight to AA with the Angels, with the Rocket City Trash Pandas. And we've seen
a
couple of other guys. Yeah, we've seen a couple of other guys get sent straight to AA now from the draft. So,
yeah.
You know, they're at least getting closer, but it's working for the Angels. I mean, last night, funny enough, all in one night, you had Ben Joyce come out there and you know, give you a scoreless frame, strike out two guys in the seventh, and then the game ended on a Zach Neto diving catch at shortstop.
It's the new guys.
So two rookies that were drafted in 2022, both making key plays for you. And, I mean, they've had Neto hitting leadoff at times, and he's been their everyday shortstop. There's been some growing pains. I mean, he's hitting .254, but 254 for a rookie shortstop, you're thrown into a leadoff role.
Yeah.
And you combine that with the defense and with just some of the spark he's provided in general, you take that. So I hope this leads to more teams calling dudes up. But catch a break here, good, bad, and the ugly. Coming up on the other side, stay with us here on the Blitz.
Are you...
Monday at 11:40, time to play a little good, bad, and the ugly from the weekend. Matthew, your first time playing, so.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. I may have not done a great job, but we'll see.
I mean, it's
I'll
just,
improve.
You know, it's you pick something good, and then you pick something bad, and then
simple game,
pick
dude.
Something ugly. So.
Simple game.
Yeah, I'll throw it to you first. You were good from the weekend.
All right, good. So we talked about him a lot, but I want to specifically just focus on the contract of Caleb Martin. This dude shot 60% in this past round, as we said, a huge part of the Heat taking down the Celtics. And he's on a really good deal, which was shocking to me after I just looked it up, because he obviously was waived by the Hornets. I would have thought he had, maybe he was under a one-year deal or something. But he's signed, he has a player option in 24-25, and he's going to be making 6.4 and 6.8 the next 2 years. But man, if that guy was on the open market this year, he would have made so much money on this playoff run. And we see it year after year with guys. The last big one I remember, I would have to look back through the last couple of playoffs, but another one that sticks out in my mind was Fred VanVleet's run when they won a title in Toronto. He made so much money after he just kicked it into another gear in the playoffs, and we see it all the time. And like you said, he was one of the most consistent parts of this Heat team since the playoffs started, definitely since the Celtics series started. And the Heat have him under an incredible contract, and it's another guy, you know, out of a whole group of undrafted and second round and late first round picks that have come together as an incredible team. So I think the good really should go to the Heat front office and Pat Riley, because he just continues to make incredible moves in team building and putting great pieces around his star, something he's always done.
Only like two more years then until we're giving Caleb Martin the Supermax.
Yes, exactly. So you can save a couple bucks for the next 2 years, but then, yeah, he's going to have to get paid.
What if he does just turn into a superstar?
He could be.
How funny would that be?
I'm trying to think, like, there's not even really another, like, comparison to the jump that this guy has made. Literally waived by the Charlotte Hornets, Charlie.
He was in the G League recently.
That's like...
semi-recently.
That's like if you got fired from... I don't even know what would be like the worst company to get fired from. Like one of those banks before
you got
shut
fired
down.
From Crystals.
Yeah, Crystal. Well, a couple Crystal Burgers couldn't hurt you on a Saturday right before the Tennessee game.
No, nah, I'm gonna hate on Crystals. I'll sleep on Crystals.
I'm thinking you had a bad experience one night at a late night Crystal, and you're projecting that onto them. But I stand by a couple Crystal Burgers. Can't hurt you. But anyways, yes, it would be similar to like here's one: getting fired from Radio Shack. It's like, you guys, come on. We're going out of business. Why am I getting fired? We're shutting the store down. We're out of radio. We're out of shower radios, guys. Why am I getting fired for this? That's basically like what happens if you get cut by the Hornets. And to go from that to now being the second most important player on a NBA Finals, you know, appearing team, an Eastern Conference Finals champion, like, what an ascension. That's my good.
My good from the weekend, Tulane baseball.
Oh, what a story.
19-41. That was their record entering the American Conference tournament. Throw it back a little bit further. They started their year, their first 11 games, 1-10. Just really a tough season for the Wave. And it's a real shame, too, because they have some of the best uniforms in baseball. But going to get to see those uniforms after all. From 19-40, to winning 5 games in 6 days in the American Conference Tournament. They were the 7th seed in the American, and they ended up going on a run all the way through the tournament and winning the American Conference Championship, punching their ticket into the NCAA tournament, where they are being sent to the Baton Rouge Regional. Congratulations on the American Conference Championship. Here's Paul Skeens, but doesn't matter if you're Tulane.
Yeah, what a run.
What a run. I mean, yeah, you got to be just thrilled if you're a Tulane baseball fan. Again, I'm just pumped to get those sweet, sweet jerseys in the tournament. Even on that final day, even on Sunday, they had to erase a 5-3 deficit against a pretty good East Carolina team that, you know, was maybe even trying to get themselves in as a last, you know, last-ditch effort to host. So good for Tulane and good for Cinderella's everywhere, really. You're bad from the weekend?
I will give it to you, but I would just like to add on Tulane. Could you imagine going to school there right in New Orleans? It'd be incredible. Bad. Okay, I didn't do a sports one for this one. Hope that's okay with
you.
Yeah,
that's plenty
bad
fun.
Spoilers. I don't know where you are,
dude,
in this Succession timeline.
So mad.
It's
okay,
so bad. Because
I'm going to watch Succession at some point.
Oh, so you haven't seen it at all?
At all.
Okay.
And I can't go anywhere.
So,
I feel like I need to wait now 2 years before I start Succession. Just because I don't
need the Men in
like,
Black.
Yeah, I need to forget some of these things.
Need the Men in Black memory erasers, which you need.
Because I haven't seen like total and complete spoilers, but I just feel like
me
based
either.
Off of what I've said, I don't have any context of what it means, but I'll start watching the show and know what they are.
Yeah, it's bad. Because here's my thing with Succession, is I have seen everything through season 3, and it's an incredible show. It's probably a top 5 show, in my opinion, of all time. I have a very high regard for the show. It is dense. It is a hard show to binge, but I enjoy binging it. Every season I have watched in a binge way. I haven't followed along as they released them. I was waiting for them to all be out. I was going to binge them all at once, and it got spoiled for me. And I'd been doing a really good job. You know, there's tons of shows and podcasts out there that are like, all right, now let's do our Succession recap. Immediately pause, turn off, not listening. I'm going to wait till I see it all. And then I get on Twitter yesterday after the finale was on Sunday and spoiled the ending. And I hate that. I'm very frustrated with the spoilers, so that's my bad.
Yeah, the spoilers were out on Sunday because Barry also had its series.
Another
finale.
Great show.
One of the best shows
behind on that as well, though.
Television history.
Incredible.
I enjoyed this final season. They did a lot.
So you were caught up on Barry.
Yeah, I watched the season finale.
I only saw one in
the series finale.
I've only seen episode 1 and 2 of the new season so far. Falling behind on that
there's
as well.
There's been a lot going on, but I was very sad to see that show end. My bad from the weekend goes back to last night. It's Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. It's the Jays, as some call them, and their inability to hit threes for the Boston Celtics really throughout this entire playoffs. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown combined to make 18 threes this series. Caleb Martin and Tyler Hero combined to make 22.
How many minutes did Tyler Hero play?
Zero.
Yeah, not
zero
a lot.
Minutes. That's how many
That's
Tyler
wild.
Hero played. So
That's
Caleb
wild.
Martin made more threes than the Jays combined
in
that playoff series. Just the least clutch stars in the NBA. It was like Derek White last night. I feared him more than I feared Tatum
was.
Or Brown.
Yeah.
He was the only one that had that dog in him.
Only one that had
only
could get
one
anything.
That had any kind of fight to him.
Yeah.
You were ugly from the weekend.
I'm actually going to go back a little bit. Obviously, you may have already touched on it like last week or whatever, but I just want to like put a bow on the Michael Block story. Like, what an awesome way to be introduced into the national scale by like hanging with all the big dogs in the PGA Championship. If you're not familiar, he's a PGA club pro in California, charges $150 for lessons, and then he finishes top 15 at the PGA Championship, makes almost $300,000, gets a sponsor exemption for the Schwab the next weekend. I believe he's also playing this weekend.
He got the exemption. Do we know if he's still for sure going to go play?
I would assume so. Maybe not after what happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he's like this media darling. Everybody loves him. He's paired with Rory on Sunday of the PGA Championship. He makes an ace on 15, you know, coming into the clubhouse, and he is an absolute superstar, and he was riding maybe a little too close to the sun. He should have gone away. He should have gone back to his club, celebrated with all of his friends there. You know, he probably drinks for free there the rest of his life if he does.
He could have just ridden in the sunset, a legend, and never played.
And it would have been the perfect story. And instead, he has to go on podcasts saying, you know, how he has world-class short game and he would be the best player. He would be a top player in the world if he had the distance that some of these guys have. And then he finishes DFL in the following week's tournament and looked just terrible from the very start, and which is to be expected. Like, he had a miracle run, probably had a big celebrating time after the PGA Championship, and then immediately tries to show up again at another difficult golf course. And I loved the guy, but the story wore thin for me pretty quickly, and it's kind of ruined now that he played so poorly.
I didn't really have an issue with some of the things that he was saying to the media, you know, talking about if he had the distance, then he could be a world-class player. You know, he has a world-class short game and everything else, just because I think to be a PGA Tour professional to compete at that level, like, you have to believe that. You have to tell yourself that as a competitor. You have to buy in to some of what you're telling yourself to be successful. But it's a tough look when he talks about, oh, you know, he just needs the distance, and then he goes to a course like the one they were playing for the Charles Schwab, and it's such a course that, you know, fits shorter hitters that it's really more about the approach, and you can play that course short, and he struggled the way he did.
Yeah, he had an opportunity to show off that short game. It didn't really work out for him. So that turned ugly.
My ugly from the weekend, heading up to New York.
Okay. What's going on up there?
It is the Section V State Championship between the Hornell Red Raiders and Paul Mack.
Storied rivalry.
Batavia is where this game took place, if I pronounced that right. Hornell up 5-4. Final inning, 2 strikes. One man on. Strike 3, drop third strike. The catcher scoops it and looks like he's going to tag the guy running down the baseline. misses the tag, looks back at the umpire. You can see the umpire indicate that he didn't get the tag off.
Yeah.
But Hornell goes crazy. They're on the field. They're dogpiling. They're celebrating a state championship that they just won 5-4. But Paul Mack, they just keep running the bases.
Yeah.
Drop third strike again. You know, it's live. Again, there's a lot of confusion. Both teams wearing red. You know, I think maybe some of the players thought that he got the tag on the drop third strike.
Right.
But guy from second, he just keeps running. He scores. And then the guy that was at the plate that struck out just kept going.
Yeah. It's the hobby bias stealing first.
This team's just in the infield. They're jumping up and down, dogpiling, celebrating. And this guy goes from drop third strike from home all the way around the bases and scores.
Brutal.
So Hornell goes from state champions to getting walked off.
Yeah,
because
state
losers. They didn't finish this drop third strike. And on the other hand, Paul Mack, I mean, that guy, you struck out to win the state championship if you're that guy.
Yeah.
It's just an absurd way to lose. An all-time loss. This video has been all over Twitter. Again, probably the most confusing part, both teams wearing red uniforms. Mm. But just chaos on the field. And I could not imagine a worse way to lose anything, especially a state
Brutal.
Championship.
Yeah, the kids who are seniors on that team, just devastated.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable way to end. But 11:54, we're almost out of time today, so we will go ahead. We'll end the show like we always do. I guess I didn't let you know this beforehand.
Okay, surprise.
We end the
me.
Show every day with our best bet for the day.
Okay, all right. That's easy for me. So, I know what it's going to be. So you
one
start
bet
us off.
To end the day, to send us out. I guess I will start us off. My best bet for the evening. No hockey tonight, no NBA tonight, but don't fret. Going over to the MLB. I'm going to take on the road tonight. The Rangers are -130 against the Detroit Tigers. They got Martin Perez on the mound. He's 6-1 this year, sub-4 ERA. The Rangers have been rolling. Beat Detroit 5-0 last night. I'm going to take the Rangers, and because you're giving up a little juice, -130, I'm going to go ahead and parlay that together with another game tonight. I'm going to take the Rays, -195, that money line too, with Shane McClanahan on the mound, who has a 1.97 ERA and an 8-0 record. He's facing Kyle
Cy Young's.
Yeah, Shane McClanahan, Cy Young favorite right now, presumably.
He's been awesome, dude.
One of. So I'm going to parlay the two of those together. One's at -130, one's at -195. You put that together, you get it at about +135, +145.
Yeah, so I was going – when I said, yeah, I know what mine's going to be, it was because I know the Rays are going to win today, but it's too much juice. I'm not going to give that out. But the Kyle Hendricks-Shane McClanahan matchup I think lends itself well to a no run in the first inning, which I'm looking at -127. So I would throw that in your parlay. I think that's a three-leg that I'm going to place.
We can just combine them, yeah.
That I'm going to place for sure. And I think that's a winner. Here's the thing. I watch every single Rays baseball game. They do not get off to hot starts. They got blanked yesterday. That's what makes me a little bit nervous because I know they're going to want to put runs on the board. But I think the Kyle Hendricks, Shane McClanahan matchup spells six quick outs for us. No run first inning. That's going to be my addition to our little two-man parlay, three legs winner.
Love it. Love it, and good show today. Good little Tuesday back after the long weekend. We'll be back same time, same place tomorrow morning. But for today, for Matthew Gill, good to get you in here. I'm
Absolutely.
Charlie Collier. Appreciate y'all tuning in. Have a beautiful rest of your Tuesday. John Reed, Talk Sports, they're up next. Stay locked into Fan Run Radio.